hailing toward him. He froze in surprise. What was Zeb doing? The ball of liquid fire was bigger than any he had seen before. It illuminated the trees all around with its blue and yellow flame, shrieking as it advanced. Richard watched, wide-eyed as it came, tumbling, twisting, expanding. With a fright of what was about to happen, Richard's hand went to the hilt, feeling the word truth press into the flesh of his palm. With a strong pull, he drew the sword, sending metallic ringing into the air. Released, the magic raced instantly through him. The fire was almost there. As he had done when he had been with Shota, he held the sword up, gripping the hilt in one hand, the point in the other, arms locked, holding it before him as a shield. Wrath took him at the thought of Zed betraying them. It couldn't be Zed. The impact drove him back a step. Heat and fire was all around him. The anger of the wizard's fire exploded, scattering back into the air from where it came, and then it was gone. "Zed, what are you doing? Are you crazy? It's me, Richard!" He advanced, angry. Angry that Zed would do this. Angry from the magic of the sword. The heat of his rage pounded through his veins. Zed, in his simple robes, looking as thin and frail as ever, stood his ground. Chase, bristling weapons, looking as dangerous as ever, stood his. Zed took Kaelin's arm in his stick-like hand and pulled her protectively behind him. Chase started forward, the look in his eyes as dark as his clothes.
"Chase," Zed cautioned in a low voice, "don't be a fool. Stay where you are."
Richard looked from one grim face to another.
"What's the matter with you three? What are you doing here? I told you not to come after me. Darkenrall has sent men to capture you. You must turn back."
Zed, his white hair in its usual disarray, turned a little to Kaelin, but kept his eyes on Richard.
"Do you know what he's saying?"
Kaelin shook her head, pulling some of her long hair back. "No, I think it's High Dahoran. I don't speak High Dahoran."
"High Dahoran? What are you talking about? What are—"
With a cold wave of understanding, he remembered. It was the enemy web Darkenrall had put on him. They didn't recognize him. They thought he was their worst enemy. They thought he was Darkenrall. Another thought came to him. Bumps ran up his arms to the back of his neck. Zed, at least, thought he was Darkenrall and had used wizard's fire against him. Zed wasn't the traitor. That left only Kaelin. Could it be she saw him for who he really was? Choked with fear at the thought, he advanced toward her as his stare locked on her green eyes. Kaelin's back stiffened, her hands at her sides, her head held up. Richard recognized the stance. It was one of warning, serious warning. He knew what her touch would do to him. He remembered Shota's warning that he might beat Zed, but that Kaelin would not fail. Zed tried to stay between them. Richard hardly noticed him as he pushed the old man out of the way. Zed came up behind him and put his thin fingers on the back of Richard's neck. They gave a pain something like the Aegeal had given. Fire burned through the nerves of his arms and all the way down his legs. Before all the time spent at the mercy of Denna, the wizard's fingers would have paralyzed him with pain. But Denna had spent a long time training him, forcing him to tolerate pain, to deal with this much and more. Zed was a match for what Denna had been able to do, but Richard pulled resolve from deep within himself and put the pain from his mind, letting the anger of the sword take its place. He gave Zed a look of warning. The wizard didn't back off. Richard gave him another shove. He pushed harder than he intended to, and Zed tumbled to the ground. Kaelin stood frozen in front of him.
"Who do you see me as?" the Seeker whispered. "Darkenrall or Richard?"
She trembled slightly, seemingly unable to move. Richard's eye was caught by something. His view flicked down for an instant, and he saw that he had the sword point at her throat, at the hollow of her neck. He hadn't been aware of putting it there. It was as if the magic had taken it there of its own accord. But he knew that wasn't true. He had put it there. That was why she was trembling. A drop of blood grew against her skin under the sword's point. If she was the traitor, he had to kill her. The blade had turned white. So had Caelan's face. "Who do you see?" he whispered again. "What have you done to Richard?" Her whisper was ragged with rage. "If you have harmed him, I swear I will kill you." He remembered the way she had kissed him. It was not the kiss of a traitor. It was a kiss of love. He realized there was no way he could kill her, even if his fear was true. But he knew now it wasn't. With tears in his eyes, he slid the sword into its scabbard. "I'm sorry, Caelan. May the good spirits forgive me for what I almost did. I know you can't understand me, but I'm sorry. Darkenrall is using the wizard's first rule on me, trying to turn us against one another. He is trying to make me believe a lie, and I almost did. I know you and Zed would never betray me. Forgive me for thinking it."
"What do you want?" Zed asked. "We can't understand you."
"Zed," he ran his fingers through his hair in frustration, "how can I make you understand?" He grabbed the wizard's robes in his fists.
"Zed, where's the box? I have to have the box before Rawl finds it. We can't let him get it."
Zed frowned. Richard knew this was doing no good. None of them could understand him. He went to the horses and started searching through the packs.
"Look all you want, you'll never find it," the wizard smiled. "We don't have the box. You're going to die in 4 days.
Richard sensed something move behind him. He spun around. Chase had the mace raised. A stream of fire shot past between them. Scarlet kept the fire up until Chase stepped back.
"Some friend you have," the dragon grumbled. "Darkenrall put a wizard's web on me. They don't recognize me."
"Well, if you stay with them much longer, they are going to kill you." Richard realized that they wouldn't have the box. Not if they were coming to Dahara to save him. They wouldn't have risked taking the box to Rawl. The three of them silently watched him and the dragon. "Scarlet, say something to them. See if they can understand you." The dragon's head swept closer to the three.
"This is not Darkenrall, but your friend, hidden by a wizard's web. Can any of you understand me?"
The three stood mute. Aggravated, Richard stepped closer to Zed.
"Zed, please try to understand me. Don't seek the Nightstone. If you do, Rawl will trap you in the underworld. Try to understand."
None of the three grasped a word he was saying. He had to get the box first. Then he would come back and protect them from the men Rawl had sent. Reluctantly, he climbed back up onto Scarlet. She kept a wary eye to the three, puffing a little smoke and flame in warning. Richard wanted desperately to stay with Caelan, but he couldn't. He had to get the box first.
"Let's get out of here. We have to go find my brother."
With a roar of flame, warning the three to stay back, Scarlet took to the air. Richard held her spikes tight. Her red, scaled neck stretched out as she climbed into the sky among the drifting white clouds weaving between them. He watched his three friends watching back until he could see them no more. He felt desperately helpless. He wished he could have seen Caelan smile just once.
"Now what?" Scarlet asked over her shoulder. "We have to find my brother. He should be with an army of about 1,000 men somewhere between here and the Rang Shada. They shouldn't be as hard to find."
"They couldn't understand my words. The web must affect me, too, since I'm with you. But it must be a web for people, not dragons, for I see the truth. If these three wanted to kill you because of a wizard's web, surely the others will, too. I can't protect you against 1,000 men."
"I have to try. I'll think of something. Michael is my brother. I'll think of a way to make him see the truth."
He's on his way with the army to help me. I need his help very badly.
Since an army would be easier to spot, they flew high to see more ground. Scarlet made gentle sweeping turns among the immense cottony clouds. Richard hadn't realized how big clouds really were when viewed this close. As some of them gathered, it was like being in a wonderland of white mountains and valleys. The dragons skimmed under their dark bases, sometimes passing through a damp wisp that hung down, her head disappearing in the whiteness at the end of her neck, the tips of her wings vanishing too. The size of the clouds made even Scarlet seem small and insignificant. They searched for hours without seeing any sign of an army. Richard was getting so used to flying, he didn't have to hold on to Scarlet's spikes all the time. He leaned back against two of them, letting his body relax while he looked at the landscape below. As they flew, Richard thought about what he could do to convince Michael of who he was. Michael would have the box. That had to be where Zed had left it. Zed would have hidden it from Rawl with magic and let the army protect it. He had to think of a way to show Michael who he was. Once he had the box, he would have Scarlet fly it up to her cave with her egg. There it would be safe from Rawl. Then he could go back to Kaelin and protect her from Rawl's men. Maybe he could have Scarlet fly her to the cave, too. She would be safe from the men there. 3.5 days, and then Dark and Rawl would die. Then Kaelin would be safe for sure. Forever. Then he would go back to Westland, be finished with the magic. Be finished with Kaelin. The thought of never seeing her again made him weak with pain. Late in the afternoon, Scarlet spotted the army. She was better at seeing things from this height than he. They were still a long way off, and Richard had to stare a while. At first he saw only a wispy column of dust. Then he saw the ranks moving along a road.
"Well, what's your plan? What do you want to do?" she called back to him. "Do you think you could land us ahead of them without letting them see us?"
A big yellow eye frowned back at him.
"I'm a red dragon. I could land us in the middle of them, and they wouldn't see me if I didn't want them to. How close do you want to be to them?"
"I don't want them to see me. I have to get to Michael without his men seeing me. I need to avoid trouble." Richard thought a moment.
"Set us down a few hours' march ahead of them. Let them come to us. It'll be dark soon, then I can get to Michael."
Scarlet held her wings spread, gliding in a spiral toward hills ahead of the advancing army. She came down behind some of the higher ground, flew up the valleys, keeping out of sight of the road, and landed in a small clearing of long brown grass. Her bright red scales, glossy and lustrous, stood out in the late afternoon light. Richard slid off her shoulder. Her head came around. "What now?" "I want to wait until dark, until they set up camp for the night. After they eat, I'll be able to sneak into Michael's tent and talk to him alone. I'll think of a way to convince him of who I really am." The dragon grumbled, looked up at the sky and toward the road. Her head swung back around, tilting, a big yellow eye peering at him. "It will be dark soon. I must return to my egg. It needs to be warmed."
"I understand, Scarlet." Richard let out a deep breath, thinking. "Come back for me in the morning. I'll wait for you in this field at sunrise."
Scarlet looked up at the sky. "Clouds are gathering." Her head came back down. "If there are clouds, I can't fly in them."
"Why?"
She grunted, a puff of smoke rising from her nostrils.
"Because clouds have rocks in them."
Richard frowned.
"Rocks?"
Her tail swished impatiently. "The clouds hide things. It's like fog. You can't see. When you can't see, you run into things like hills and mountains. I may be strong, but running into rock when I'm flying would break my neck. If the cloud bottoms are high enough, I can fly under them. If the tops are low enough, I can fly over them. But then I won't be able to see the ground. I won't be able to find you. What if there are clouds and I can't find you? Or what if something else goes wrong?"
Richard rested his hand on the hilt of his sword, looking off toward the road.
If anything goes wrong, I'll have to go back to my other three friends. I'll try to stick to the main road, so you will be able to see me." Richard swallowed hard. "If all else fails, I will have to go back to the People's Palace. Please, Scarlet, if I can't stop Rawl with what I do here, I must be in the People's Palace 3 days from tomorrow."
"Not much time."
"I know.
3 days from tomorrow, and then I'm done with you."
Richard smiled. "That's our bargain."
Scarlet peered up once more. "I don't like the look of the sky."
"Good luck, Richard Cipher. I will return in the morning."
She took a little run and lifted into the air. Richard watched her circle around him once, low, then fly off, getting smaller, disappearing between hills. A memory struck him. The memory of having seen her before. It had been the day he had first met Kaelin, right after the snake vine had bit him. He had seen her fly overhead just as she had done now, and disappear behind hills. He wondered what she had been doing in Westland that day. Making his way through the tall, dry grass, Richard hiked to a nearby hill, climbing to the top of its sparsely wooded slope, where he could watch the approaches to the west. He found a well-hidden nook in the brush, made himself comfortable, and took out some dried meat and fruit. He found he even had a few apples left. He ate without enjoyment while he watched for the Westland army and his brother, wondering all the while what he could do to convince Michael of who he was. He thought of trying to write it out, or maybe even drawing a picture or a map, but he had doubts that would work. If the enemy web around him changed his spoken words, it would probably change the written ones as well. He tried to think of games they had played when they were young, but none stood out in his mind. Michael hadn't played all that much with him when they were young. Richard remembered that Michael only really liked fighting with play swords. He didn't think pulling his sword on his brother would have the desired effect. But there was one thing, he remembered. When they had played at swords, Michael had liked Richard to salute him, while on one knee. Would Michael remember that? He had liked it done often. It made him smile more than anything else. Michael called it the loser's salute. When Richard had won, Michael wouldn't give him the salute, and Richard wasn't his match in size at the time, and hadn't ever been able to make Michael give the salute. But Michael had made Richard give it often enough. He smiled at the memory, though at the time it had hurt. Maybe Michael would remember. It was worth a try. Before dark came, Richard heard the sound of the horses coming, the sound of gear clattering, leather creaking, metal rattling, the sound of a lot of men on the move. About 50 well-armed horsemen rode past at a quick pace, raising dust and kicking up dirt. He saw Michael, dressed in white, at their lead. Richard recognized the uniforms, the Heartland crest on each shoulder, the yellow banner with a blue silhouette of a pine tree and crossed swords under it. Each man wore a short sword over his shoulder, had a battle axe hooked to a wide belt, and carried a short spear. Their mail armor, called battle nets, sent sparks of light through the dust. These were not regular Westland soldiers. These were Michael's personal guards. Where was the army? From the air he had seen all of them together, horsemen and foot soldiers. These horses were moving too fast for foot soldiers at a march to keep up. Richard stood after they passed, looking back up the road to see if the others were to follow. No one else came. At first worried at what this could mean, he relaxed, smiled. When it came to him, Zed, Chase, and Kaelin had left the box with Michael and told him they were going to Dahara, going after Richard. Michael probably couldn't wait any longer and was going himself to help. The foot soldiers couldn't keep up the pace needed to reach the People's Palace in time, so Michael had taken his personal guard and ridden on ahead, leaving the rest to catch up when they could. 50 men, even Michael's personal guard, tough as they were,
were still not many if they ran into a good-sized force of Rawl's men. Richard guessed that Michael was putting his heart above his head. Richard didn't catch them until well after dark. They had ridden hard and stopped late. They had gotten farther ahead of him than he had expected, and it was well past dinner when he finally reached their camp. The horses had been tended to and picketed for the night. Some men were already in their bedrolls. Guards were posted, and hard to spot in the dark, but Richard knew where to expect them, as he looked down from a hilltop, watching the camp's small fires. It was a dark night. Clouds hid the moon. He worked his way carefully down the hill, creeping silently between the guards. Richard was in his element. It was easy for him. He knew where they were, and they weren't expecting him to be gliding through their midst. He watched them watching, and ducked down when they looked his way. Once inside the ring of guards, he made his way to the camp. Michael had made it easy for him. His tent was set off, away from the men. If he had put his tent among his men, it would have been more difficult. Still, there were guards around the tent. Richard studied them for a while, analyzing the weak points, until he found the place where he would pass between them. In the shadow of the tent, the shadow cast by the fires. The guards stayed to the light because they couldn't see anything in the shadow. Richard stalked through the blackness to the tent and squatted down, making himself still, silent, low to the ground. He listened for a long time to determine if anyone was in the tent with Michael. He heard papers being shuffled, and there was a lamp burning, but he heard no one else inside. Carefully, he made a tiny cut with his knife, just enough to see through. He saw Michael's left side to him as he sat at a small collapsible field table, looking over papers. His head of unruly hair was cradled in one hand. The papers didn't seem to have lines of words on them, and from what Richard could see, they were large. Probably maps. He had to get inside, stand tall, drop to one knee, and do his salute before Michael had a chance to raise an alarm. Just inside, below him, was a cot. That was what he needed to hide his entry. Holding the rope taut so the canvas wouldn't jerk back suddenly, Richard cut the tie down in about the center of where the cot sat, then lifted the edge of the canvas a little and rolled carefully underneath it, behind the cot. When Michael turned to a sound, Richard rose up in front of the little table, in front of his brother. Richard had a smile on his face at seeing his older brother again. Michael's head snapped to him. The color left his soft cheeks. He leapt to his feet. Richard was just about to do his salute when Michael spoke. "Richard, how did you... What are you doing here? It's so good to see you again. We have all been so worried." Richard's smile withered. When the enemy web was put on him, Rawl had said those who honored Rawl would see Richard for who he was. Michael saw him for who he was. Michael was the one who had betrayed him. Michael was the one who allowed him to be captured and tortured by a moored Sith. Michael was the one who would give Kaelin and Zed over to Dark and Rawl. Michael was the one who would give everyone over to Dark and Rawl. His insides turned to ice. Richard could manage no more than a whisper. "Where is the box?"
"Ah, you look hungry, Richard. Let me have some dinner brought in for you. We'll have a talk. It's been so long."
Richard kept his hand away from the sword, for fear he would use it. He sternly reminded himself that he was the Seeker, and that was all that mattered right now. He was not Richard. He was the Seeker. He had a job to do. He could not allow himself to be Richard. He could not allow himself to be Michael's brother. There were more important things right now. Much more important. "Where is the box?"
Michael's eyes darted about. "The box? Well, Zed told me about it. He was going to give it to me. But then he said something about finding you and Dahara by a stone of some sort, and the three of them went off after you. I told them I wanted to come too, to save my brother, but I had to get the men together and prepare, so they started ahead of me. Zed kept the box. He has it.
Richard now knew. Darkon Rall had the third box. Darkon Rall had spoken the truth.
The Seeker suppressed his emotions and made a quick assessment of the situation. The only thing that mattered now was getting to Kaelin. If he lost his head now, she would be the one to suffer. She would be the one at the end of an Aegeal. He found himself concentrating on a mental image of Denna's braid. He let himself do it. Whatever worked, he told himself. He couldn't kill Michael, couldn't risk being captured by all those men outside. He couldn't even let Michael know what he knew. That would accomplish nothing, and risk others. He took a deep breath and forced a smile. Well, as long as the box is safe, that's what counts. Some of the color returned to Michael's face, bringing with it a smile. Richard, are you all right? You look different. You look like you have been through a lot.
More than you could ever know, Michael.
He sat down on the cot. Michael returned cautiously to his chair. Dressed in his baggy white trousers and shirt, a gold belt at his waist, he looked like a disciple of Darkon Rall. Richard noticed the maps his brother had been looking at. Maps of Westland. Maps of Westland for Darkon Rall.
I was in Dahara, just as Zed told you, but I escaped. We have to get away from Dahara, as far away as possible. I must go get the others, before they go there looking for me. You can take your men back now. Take the army back and protect Westland. Thank you, Michael, for coming to help me.
His brother's smile widened. You're my brother. What else was I going to do?
With the pain of betrayal burning hotly in him, Richard forced a warm smile. In some ways, this was worse than if the traitor had been Kaelin. He had grown up with Michael. They were brothers, and had shared a good portion of their lives. He had always admired Michael, always supported him, given him his unconditional love. He remembered bragging to other boys about his older brother.
Michael, I need a horse. I must be on my way, right now.
We'll all go with you, me and my men. His grin widened. Now that we're back together, I don't want to lose sight of you again.
Richard jumped to his feet.
No!
He calmed his voice. You know me. I'm used to being alone in the woods. It's what I do best. You would only slow me down. I don't have the time now.
Michael stood, his eyes shifting to the tent's opening.
I'll not hear of it. We are— No! You are first counselor of Westland. That is your first responsibility, not watching after your little brother. Please, Michael, take the army back to Westland. I'll be fine.
Michael rubbed his chin.
Well, I guess you're right. We were only going to Dahara to help you, of course, and now that you're safe.
Thank you for coming to help me, Michael.
I'll get my own horse. You go back to your work.
Richard felt like the biggest fool that had ever lived. He should have known. He should have figured it out a long time ago. He remembered the speech Michael had given about fire being the enemy of the people. He should have known from that, if nothing else.
Kaelin had tried to warn him that first night. Her suspicions that Michael was on Rall's side were correct. If only he had listened to his head instead of his heart. Wizard's first rule. People are stupid. They believe what they want to believe. He had been the stupidest of them all. He was too angry with himself to be angry with Michael. His refusal to see the truth was going to cost him everything. He had no choices left him now. He deserved to die. With wet eyes held on Michael, Richard slowly dropped to one knee and gave the loser's salute. Michael put his hands on his hips and smiled down.
You remember? That was a long time ago, little brother.
Richard rose. Not so long ago. Some things never change.
I always loved you.
Goodbye, Michael. Richard gave momentary thought again to killing his brother. He knew he would have to do it with the anger of the sword. He would never be able to bring himself to forgive Michael and make the blade white. For himself, maybe, but for what he had done to Kaelin and Zed, never. Killing Michael wasn't as important as helping Kaelin. He couldn't take the risk just to soothe his own stupidity. He went through the tent's opening. Michael followed. At least stay and have something to eat. There are other things to discuss. I'm still not sure.
Richard turned back, looking at his brother standing in front of the tent. A light mist had begun to fall. He realized by the look on Michael's face that he didn't have any intention of letting him go. He was only waiting until he could get to his men for support.
"Do it my way, Michael, please. I have to go." "You men!" he called to the guards. "I want my brother to stay with us, for his own protection."
Three guards started for him. Richard leapt over the brush and into the blackness of the night. They followed, clumsily. These were not woodsmen. They were soldiers. Richard didn't want to have to kill them. They were Westlanders. He slipped through the darkness while the camp came to life with the sound of orders being yelled. He heard Michael yelling for them to stop him, but not to kill him. Of course not. He wanted to hand Richard over to Darkenrall personally. Richard made his way around the camp to the horses, slipping between the guards. He cut all the lead lines, then mounted one, bareback. He yelled and kicked and slapped at the others. They bolted in panic. Men and horses ran in every direction. He put his heels to his horse. The sound of frantic voices faded behind him. His face was wet with mist and tears as he ran his horse into the blackness. Chapter 47. Zed lay awake in the early dawn light, his mind filled with troubling thoughts. Clouds had gathered during the night, and it looked to be a wet journey ahead. Kaelin lay on her side, facing toward him, close to him, breathing slowly in a deep sleep. Chase was off somewhere on watch. The world was coming apart, and he felt helpless, a leaf in the wind. He thought that somehow, being a wizard, after all these years he should have some control of events. Yet he was hardly more than a bystander, watching others being hurt, killed, while he tried to guide those who could make a difference, to do what needed to be done. As a wizard of the First Order, he knew better than to go to Dahara, and yet what else could he do? He had to go if there was any chance of rescuing Richard. In 3 days it would be the first day of winter. Darkenrall had only 2 boxes. He was going to die. If they didn't get Richard out of there, Darkenrall would kill him first. He thought again of the encounter with Darkenrall the day before. Try as he might, he couldn't understand it. It was bizarre in the extreme. Rall had obviously been frantic to find the box, so frantic that he didn't kill him when he had the chance. The wizard who had killed his father, the one he had been searching for, and when he found him, he did nothing. But his other behavior defied sense. The sight of him wearing Richard's sword gave Zed chills. Why would Darkenrall, master of the magic of both worlds, be wearing the Sword of Truth? More to the point, what had he done to Richard to get the sword from him? The most disturbing behavior had been when he held the sword to Kaelin. Zed had never felt more helpless in his life. It was stupid to try to use wizard's pain on him. Those with the gift, and who had survived the test of pain, could survive the touch. But what was he to do? To see Darkenrall holding the Sword of Truth at her throat gave him pain, the worst kind of pain.
For a moment, he had been sure Rawl was going to kill her, and then the next moment, before Zed had a chance to do anything, futile as it would have been, Rawl got tears in his eyes and put the sword away. Why would Dark and Rawl bother to use the sword if he wanted to kill her, or any of them, for that matter? He could kill any of them with a snap of his fingers. Why would he want to use the sword? And why then stop? Worse, though, was that he had made the blade turn white. When Zed had seen that, he had almost parted company with his skin. The prophecy spoke of the one who would turn the sword of truth white, spoke with great caution. That it would be Dark and Rawl gave him a fright to his very core. That it might have been Richard who would turn the sword white had caused him a dread all its own. But for it to be Rawl. The veil, the prophecies called it, the veil between the world of life and the underworld. If the veil was torn by the magic of Ordin, through an agent, the prophecies foretold, only the one who had turned the sword of truth white could restore it. Unless he was able to, the underworld would be loosed on the world of the living. The word agent had terrible significance that worried Zed greatly. It could mean that Dark and Rawl was not acting on his own, but was an agent of the underworld. That he had gained mastery of the subtracted magic, the underworld magic, implied that he was. It also implied that even if Rawl failed and was killed, the magic of Ordin would still tear the veil. Zed tried not to think of what these prophecies meant. The idea of the underworld being loosed made his throat clench shut. Better for him to be dead first. Better for everyone to be dead first. Zed rolled his head to the side, watching Kaelin sleep. The Mother Confessor. The last of the ones created by the old wizards. His heart ached for her pain. Ached because he hadn't been able to help her when Rawl held the sword at her throat. Ached for what she felt for Richard, and for what he couldn't tell her. If only it had not been Richard, anyone but Richard. Nothing was ever easy. Zed sat up in a rush. Something was wrong. It was too light out for Chase not to be back. With a finger to Kaelin's forehead, Zed brought her wide awake. Kaelin reflected his worry in her face. "What is it?" she whispered. Zed sat still, feeling for life around him.
"Chase isn't back, and he should be."
She looked about. "Maybe he fell asleep." Zed lifted an eyebrow. "Well, maybe there is a good reason. Maybe it's nothing."
"Our horses are gone."
Kaelin came to her feet, checking her knife. "Can you sense where he is?" Zed flinched.
"There are others about. Others touched by the underworld."
He jumped to his feet. As he did, Chase, having been pushed, stumbled and fell face first into the camp. His arms were tied securely behind his back, and there was blood on him. A lot of blood. He groaned in the dirt. Zed felt the presence of men around them. Four men. He recoiled at what he felt of them. The big man who had pushed Chase stepped forward. His short blonde hair stood up in spikes, and a black streak ran back through it. His cold eyes, his smile, sent a chill through the wizard. Kaelin was in a half-crouch. "Demon Nass," she hissed. He hooked his thumbs in his belt.
"Ah, you've heard of me, Mother Confessor."
His wicked smile widened.
"I've certainly heard of you. Your friend here has killed five of my best men. I'll execute him later, after the festivities. I'd like him to have the enjoyment of watching what we do to you."
Kaelin looked about as three other men, not as big as Demon Nass, but bigger than Chase, stepped out of the woods. They were surrounded, but that was not a problem for a wizard. Each of the men was blonde-haired, heavily muscled,
and covered in sweat despite the chill to the air. Chase had obviously given them trouble. For now, their weapons were put away. They had no fear of their control of the situation. Their confidence irritated Zed. Their grins made him furious. The early light made the four pairs of blue eyes all the more penetrating. Zed knew very well that this was a quad, and he knew very well what it was that quads did to confessors. Very well. His blood boiled at the knowing. There was no way he was going to let that happen to Kalin. Not as long as he was alive. Demon Nass and Kalin stared at one another. "Where is Richard? What has Rawl done with him?" she demanded.
"Who?"
She gritted her teeth. "The Seeker." Demon smiled.
"Well, now, that is Master Rawl's and my business, not yours."
"Tell me," she glared. His smile widened.
"You have more important things to worry about right now, Confessor. You are about to give my men a very good time. I want you to keep your mind on that and make sure they enjoy themselves. The Seeker does not concern you."
Zed decided that it was time to stop this, before something more happened. He brought his hands up and released the most powerful paralysis web he could marshal. The camp lit with a loud crack of green light as it flashed in four directions at once, toward each of the blue-eyed men. The green light hit each man with a hard thud. Before the wizard had time to react, things went terribly wrong. As fast as the green light hit them, it reflected back from each. Too late, Zed realized that they were protected by a spell of some sort, an underworld spell that he hadn't been able to see. From four directions at once, the green light hit him. His own web paralyzed him in place. He was frozen tight as stone, helpless. Try as he might, he could not move. Demon Nass took his thumb out of his belt.
"Problem, old man?"
Kalin, a look of rage on her face, stretched her arm out and planted her hand against his smooth chest. Zed braced for the release of her power, for the thunder with no sound. It didn't come. By the look of surprise on Kalin's face, he knew it should have. Demon Nass brought his fist down and broke her arm. Kalin fell to her knees with a cry of pain. She came back up with her knife in her other hand, slashing at the man before her. He grabbed her hair with his fist, holding her away. She drove the knife up into the arm that held her. He pulled the knife out and twisted it from her hand. With a toss, he stuck it in a tree. Holding her by the hair, he backhanded her across the face a few times. She kicked and clawed and screamed at him while he chuckled. The other three closed in.
"Sorry, Mother Confessor, I'm afraid you're not my type. But not to worry. These fellows here will be only too happy to do the honors. Try to wiggle your bottom, though," he sneered. "I'll enjoy that much of it."
Demon tossed her by her hair to the other three. They shoved her back and forth among them, slapping her, hitting her, spinning her around roughly until she was too dizzy to stand and fell from one pair of arms to another. She was as helpless as a mouse held by three cats. Her hair fell across her face. Kalin swung her fist at them, too disoriented to make contact. They laughed all the more. One of them slammed his fist into his stomach. Kalin doubled over, dropping to her knees, convulsed in pain. Another lifted her by her hair. The third ripped the buttons off the front of her shirt. They threw her violently back and forth, tearing her shirt, yanking it off with each throw. When it pulled over her broken arm, she screamed in pain. Zed couldn't even shake with the rage storming through him. He couldn't even close his eyes against the sight of it, close his hearing against the sound of it. Painful memories of having seen this before overlaid themselves on the reality of what was happening now. He couldn't breathe with the pain of those memories. He couldn't breathe with the pain of what was happening now.
He would have given his life to free himself. He wished she wouldn't fight them. It was only going to make it worse. But he knew confessors always fought it. Fought it with everything they had. And what she had, he knew, was not going to be enough. From the prison of his body, as if frozen into stone, Zed railed against his helplessness with everything he had, every spell, every trick, every power he possessed. It was not enough. He felt tears running down his cheeks. Kaelin screamed when one of the men tossed her by her broken arm into the powerful arms of the other two. With her lips pulled back over gritted teeth, she twisted and kicked against them while they held her tight by her arms and hair. The third man unbuckled her belt and tore open the buttons. She spat at him, screamed curses at him. He laughed as he yanked and pulled her pants down her legs, stripping them inside out over her feet. The other two had their arms full, holding her. She was almost more than they could handle. Had her arm not been broken, they might not have been able to hold her. One of them twisted it brutally, making her scream. The two holding her jerked her head back by her hair, while the third put his lips and teeth to her neck, biting her. Pawing her with one hand, he undid his belt and unfastened his pants with the other. He put his mouth over hers, suffocating her screams while his thick fingers moved from her breasts to the darkness between her legs. His pants dropped. His leg forced her thighs open. She grunted against his mouth with the effort of trying to prevent what he was doing, but she could not. His thick fingers groped and wormed into her. Her eyes opened wide. Her face was red with rage. Her breast heaved with ire. "Put her on the ground and hold her down," he growled. Kaelin's knee came up into his groin. He doubled over with a groan while the other two laughed. There was fire in his eyes as he straightened. His fist cut her lip open. Blood gushed over her chin. Chase, his arms still tied securely behind him, crashed headfirst into the man's middle. They both fell to the ground, the pants around the man's ankles tripping him up, and before he could react, Chase clamped his thighs around the man's thick neck. His blue eyes bulged. The boundary warden rolled onto his side, pulling the head back sharply. There was a loud pop, and the man went limp. Demon Nass kicked Chase in the ribs and head until he didn't move any more.
Seemingly from mid-air, fur and fangs landed on Nass. The wolf growled savagely as he tore at the big man. They tumbled to the ground, rolling over in the dirt through the fire. A knife flashed through the air.
"No!"
Kaelin screamed.
"Brophy! No! Get away!"
It was too late. The knife slashed into the wolf with a sickening thud as the fist holding it slammed against the ribs. Over and over, Nass tore the wolf open. In moments, it was over. Brophy lay sprawled on the ground, his fur matted with blood. His legs jerked a little, then were still. Kaelin hung by her arms and hair, crying and sobbing the wolf's name. Nass came to his feet, panting from the effort of the short but fierce fight. Blood ran from wounds on his chest and arm. Anger flared in his eyes.
"Make her pay," he hissed to the two men holding her. "Do her good."
Kaelin struggled and twisted against them. "What's the matter, Demon?" she screamed. "Not man enough to do it yourself? Have to have real men do it for you?" "Please, Kaelin," Zed begged silently in his mind. "Please keep your mouth shut. Please don't say anything else." Nass's face heated to red. His chest heaved. He glared at her.
"At least these are real men. At least they have what it takes to handle a woman. You probably don't. You only have enough for little boys. What's the matter, little boy? Afraid to show a real woman what you have? I'll be laughing at you while real men do what you can't."
Nass took a step closer. His teeth gritted.
Shut up, bitch!
She spat in his face. That's what your father would do if he knew you couldn't handle a woman. You're a disgrace to your father's name! Zed wondered if Kaelin had lost her mind. He had absolutely no idea why she was doing this. If she wanted to provoke Nass to do worse, this would do it. Nass looked as if he might explode. But then his face relaxed. His smile returned. He looked around and saw what he wanted.
Over there, he pointed. Hold her face down over that log.
He put his face close to hers.
You want it from me? All right, bitch, you'll get it from me, but you'll get it my way. Now we'll see how good you can squirm.
Kaelin's face was crimson with fury. I think your talk is all that's big. I think you're going to embarrass yourself. Your men and I will have a good laugh. Once again, they will have to do the job for you. Her mouth spread into a defiant smile. I'm waiting, little boy. Do it to me like your father did it to you, so we can all have a good laugh, thinking about you on your knees under him. Show me how he did it to you. The veins on his forehead threatened to burst. His eyeballs bulged. Nass's hand sprang to her throat, tightening, lifting her. He shook with rage. His grip tightened, choking her.
Commander Nass, one of the men cautioned in a low voice, you're going to kill her.
Demon looked up, glaring at the man, but then relaxed his grip. He looked back to Kaelin.
What does a bitch like you know of anything?
I know you're a liar. I know your master wouldn't let a little boy like you know what had been done with the Seeker. You know nothing. You couldn't tell me because you don't know, and you're so worthless you couldn't even admit it. So that was it. Zed understood. Kaelin knew she was going to die, and was willing to trade whatever worse Nass could do to her for knowing if Richard was all right. She didn't want to die without knowing if he was safe. The enormity of what was happening made tears roll down Zed's face. He heard Chase stir at his feet. Nass released her throat and motioned to the two men to let go of her. In a sudden burst, he struck her with his fist. She landed flat on her back. He leaned over, lifting her by her hair as if she weighed nothing.
You know nothing. Your fist says it all. Your master might tell your father, she sneered. But he wouldn't tell your father's little girl anything. All right, I'll tell you. It will make it more fun when I'm on you, to have you know what we do to little pests like the Seeker. Then maybe you'll understand you waste your time fighting us.
Kaelin stood naked in front of him, her face red with anger. She was not a small woman, but she looked small in front of Demon Nass. She breathed hard as she waited, one fist at her side, the other arm hanging limp, blood down the front of her.
Almost a month ago, an artist drew a spell so the Seeker could be captured. He killed the artist, but he was captured anyway, captured by a moored Sith.
The color drained from Kaelin's face. She turned white as a lily. Zed felt as if he had been stabbed through the heart. If it had been possible, he would have collapsed to the ground in agony. No, she whispered, her eyes wide.
Yes, he mocked, and a particularly nasty Mord Sith at that. One by the name of Denna. Even I give this one a wide berth. She is the favorite of Master Rawl because of her, he grinned, talents. From what I have heard, she outdid herself on the Seeker. I even saw her myself one day at dinner, covered from head to foot with his blood.
Kaelin shook slightly, her eyes wet, and Zed was sure she turned even whiter. But he is still alive, she whispered in a broken voice. Demon gave a self-satisfied smile, happy with the telling, at seeing her reaction.
As a matter of fact, Mother Confessor, the last I saw of the Seeker, he was on his knees in front of Master Rawl, with Denner's Ajeel at the back of his head. I don't think he even knew his own name. Master Rawl wasn't happy at the time. When Master Rawl is unhappy, people always die. From what Master Rawl said to me when I left, I'm sure the Seeker never rose from his knees. His corpse is rotten by now.
Zed wept that he couldn't comfort her, that she couldn't comfort him. Kaelin went dead calm. Her arms rose slowly into the air, her fists to the sky. Her head rolled back. She let out an unearthly scream. It went through Zed like a thousand needles of ice. It echoed against the hills, through the valleys, against the trees all around, making them vibrate. Zed's breath was taken away. Nass and the other two men stumbled back a few paces. If he had not already been frozen to stone, he would be now, at the fear of what she was doing. Kaelin should not be able to do this. She took a deep breath, her fists getting tighter, tears streaming from her face. Kaelin screamed again, long, piercing, otherworldly. The sound avalanched through the air. Pebbles danced on the ground. Water danced in the lakes around. The very air danced and began to move. The men covered their ears. Zed would have too, had he been able to move. She took another deep breath. Her back arched as she stretched to the sky. The third scream was worse. The magic of it tore through the fabric of the air. Zed felt as if it would pull his body apart. The air began to turn about her, dust rising at its passing. Darkness began to gather, the magic of the scream taking the very light away, pulling the darkness as it was pulling the wind. Light and dark moved around the Mother Confessor as she released ancient magic into the scream. Zed nearly choked with the fear of what she was doing. He had seen this being done only once before, and it came to no good end. She was joining the Confessor's magic, the additive, the love, with its counterpart from the underworld, the subtractive, the hate. Kaelin stood screaming in the center of a maelstrom. The light was sucked to her. Darkness fell all about. Where Zed stood, it was black as night. The only light was around Kaelin. Night around day. Lightning tore violently across the blackness of the sky, flashing rapidly in every direction, forking, doubling, over and over until the sky burned. Thunder rolled through the countryside, coalescing into a continuous fury, mixing with the scream, becoming part of it. The ground shook. The scream went beyond sound to something else entirely. All about, the ground cracked open in jagged, ferocious tears. Shafts of violet light shot upward from the cracks. The bluish-purple curtains of light vibrated, danced, and with gathering speed were pulled into the vortex, sucked to Kaelin. She was a glowing form of light in a sea of darkness. She was the only thing in existence. All else was nothingness, devoid even of light. Zed could see nothing but Kaelin. There was a horrific impact to the air all about. In a brief, tremendous flash of light, Zed saw the trees around them suddenly stripped of pine needles, as every one of them was blown back in a cloud of green. A wall of dust and sand hit his face, feeling as if it would take the skin from his bones in its explosive passing. The ferocity of the concussion tore the darkness away. The light was returned. The joining was complete. Zed saw Chase standing next to him, watching, his arms still tied behind his back. Boundary wardens, Zed thought, were tougher than they had a right to be. Pale blue light coalesced into a jagged egg shape around her.